deductible plans that make health care unaffordable. The People's Health and Wellness Clinic in Barrie has been providing quality health care for over 20 years. If you're an individual with an income of less than $35,000 or a family of three with an income less than $59,000, the People's Health and Wellness Clinic can help you. Call them at 479-1229. The clinic has over 100 healthcare volunteers that provide a variety of services. Tis the season for giving, and the clinic can use some donations. Through the month of December, Montpelier Pharmacy and Waterbury Pharmacy will match donations made to the People's Health and Wellness Clinic up to $5,000. Neighbors helping neighbors. Montpelier Pharmacy and Waterbury Pharmacy, locally owned and independent. Thank you.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. A little sloppy out there this morning. Be careful out on the roads. Thanks for spending part of your morning with us. If you're stuck somewhere, well, it could be worse. You could be, you'll be listening to us. Coming up on the program this morning, we're just a moment here to kick off our discussion. We're going to continue our discussion about healthcare costs here in Vermont. We're going to talk with a key representative of a really important group, which is the Vermont Hospitals. We'd love to take your phone calls throughout the program. You can reach us at the usual phone numbers, 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. Toll-free, 877-291-8255. Forecaster Roger Hill says this whole weather system is going to get significantly worse here as the day progresses. So keep that in mind. If you have events that are coming up later today or tonight, you might want to check in and make sure that they are actually still happening. Again, our number is 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Bea Grouse. Bea is the president and CEO of the Vermont Association of Hospitals and Health Systems, and she managed to get here today. Thank you very much for making it. You get a bag coffee for making it.
Oh, wow.
In here.
Awesome.
Thanks for joining us.
Sure.
Can you tell us, what is the health systems part of the Vermont Association of Hospitals and Health Systems?
Well, now it's University of Vermont Medical Center in Central Vermont. And so those are two hospitals as part of the overall UVM system. So,
okay.
But that name actually was changed quite a while ago when we actually didn't have a health system, but now we do.
Okay. Oh, we do. We actually have a health system.
We do.
There are some that don't believe that we actually do, that we actually don't have really a coordinated system. Seriously, there are people that feel that way. What would you say to that?
Well, I think we do have a health system, and it's more than just hospitals. It's our FQHCs, our designated agencies, and many other community providers. So there is, at a local level, actually a lot of clinical coordination for patients and Vermonters.
Okay. Don't use terms like that again.
I'm
sorry. FQHC. FQHC?
Federally Qualified Health Center.
All right. How many hospitals in Vermont?
There are 14 acute care hospitals. We have the new state psychiatric mental health hospital. We have an independent psychiatric hospital down in Brattleboro, and we have a VA.
So. All right. You're watching, obviously, healthcare reform here as it happens. Any reaction to the proposal that apparently is going to come out, a payroll tax and some sort of tax on us as individuals?
Well, we're not surprised, but we're, like everybody else, we're waiting for those details to come out. So we'd like to see the plan when it comes out December 29th or 30th and take a look at that along with everyone else.
Because, so. Hospitals are huge employers, too.
Yep.
Is this what impact is this going to have on hospitals, do you think?
Well, we don't exactly know yet, but many hospitals are self-insured, so it certainly will have an impact on us. And healthcare is one of the largest industries in the state of Vermont, so certainly it will have an economic impact on hospitals as employers,
mm-hmm.
but also as providers.
How big an industry is it
in terms of dollars? I think the health system for hospital care is about $2 billion in the state of Vermont. So, and overall, I don't exactly know what the number is, but it's probably...
What about in employment?
31,000.
Okay. All right. Any questions or comments, you can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Hospitals obviously play a key role in this whole healthcare reform discussion because of the money that you just talked about. Hospitals have been getting some pretty good praise from people like Al Gobay, the Greenmount Care Board, for smaller budget increases than in the past.
Right.
Why has that been achievable?
Well, I think on the expense side, I think hospitals are looking to do what they can do to reduce healthcare spending. So that has really contributed to the slower revenue growth.
Okay.
And, you know, but I think that's that is a longer-term goal. And I think for us, really, one of the key goals is to bend the cost curve, as they say, in the aggregate over time and sustain that, but also to make healthcare affordable for individual Vermonters. So that's a work in progress, but we have, I think, our long-term goal we share with the Green Mountain Care Board and the state of Vermont is to make health spending, reduce health spending growth to the rate of growth for the general economy. That's the only way that we're going to be able to sustain any improvements we make.
All right. But so why in the past couple of years has it been 2 to 3% and before it was 5, 6, 7%? What's different?
Well, I think the I think hospitals are trying to work with their community providers. You know, we started the Blueprint for Health about 10 years ago, and the whole premise of the Blueprint was really to transform primary care so that Vermonters were getting the right care at the right time at the right setting, and that we were working to make sure that people were going to their primary care provider rather than going to the emergency room.
Okay.
So that's one piece of it.
Okay. Huh. Because, I mean, that's a pretty dramatic shift in a good way.
Yes. And it's not just Vermont. I think nationwide, healthcare providers and hospitals recognize that revenue growth for health spending had reached its limit. And so... So they had to make those infrastructure changes and clinical changes to make sure that patients were getting the care that they needed, but not necessarily in hospitals.
As this whole healthcare reform discussion has been going on, to what degree do people ask for the hospital's input?
In Vermont?
Yeah.
A lot. So I actually think we're very, very fortunate in Vermont. We have very robust dialogues with other stakeholders, consumers, other providers, and the Green Mountain Care Board and the state of Vermont. We have a great access to exactly what's going on. So I feel really good about it.
You feel like you're part of the discussion,
absolutely.
Not having something that's about to be imposed on you or something?
Absolutely. So, you know, certainly, you know, with Medicaid, I think we would like to have more of a dialogue around Medicaid policy, and I think we are working on that to make sure that that we're in sync with where the state is moving with the Medicaid program. But again, even with that, I think we have really good access to the commissioner and to Medicaid policymakers as well as the Green Mountain Care Board.
Okay. Can you tell me more what you're talking about there, where you want to see Medicaid dealt with differently?
Well, I think Medicaid is a very complex program, and I think in the combination with the Agency of Human Services, with other social services, it's a challenge to figure out how the agency is caring for that very large population. So they have more complex needs, and I think we want to be at the table to make sure that we're figuring out how to make sure that we're meeting the needs of Vermonters who have both social needs and medical needs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit more complex.
Let me have you put those headphones on. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free 877-291-8255. Let's go to Barry. Pete, good morning.
Good morning, Mark, and welcome to your guest. I'm not sure if this is germane to the discussion going on, but it's my understanding, as you said, I'm from Barrie, I go up to Central Vermont. And it's my understanding that medical coverage is not offered to retirees from the hospital. If could your guest answer anything to that idea? And if so, why is that? Because they're in the healthcare business. I'll wait off the line.
Right.
Okay. I really don't know the answer to that question. For retirees over the age of 65, they're generally eligible for Medicare, but I don't know the answer to your specific question.
244-1777 is our local number. Toll free, you can reach us at 877-291-8255. We're talking with Bea Grouse, who's the president and CEO of the Vermont Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. What's the biggest worry of the hospitals as this healthcare reform unfolds?
Well, I think we're... I guess my biggest worry is that we are going to lose sight of what the goals are. And I think the goals, as I said before, are to bend the cost curve and to bring the rate of health spending growth down to the general growth in the economy and also make it affordable for individual Vermonters. I think we have to get every Vermonter covered so they have access to health coverage and access to health services, and also that every Vermonter has choice so that they can go to the doctor that they want or go to the hospital that they want. So, and, you know, the way I often say that is that we want to have a healthcare system where Vermonters get the services that they need and providers want to practice in. Otherwise, you know, we can cut ourselves to the bone, so to speak, and then people have other choices, and they can go to New Hampshire and they can go to New York and Massachusetts and get their health care there. And then, you know, then we spend all that money for a health care system that nobody uses. So, So to me, I think that's my worry, is that we're not going to stay focused on those goals. And they're not easy goals. If it was easy, we would have done it already. This work is going to take, you know, a number of years to achieve those goals. But we got to keep our eye on those goals.
Where do you worry that people are going to get distracted to?
Well, I think the whole frame around single payer is, you know, I think has been construed by some as that's the goal. To me, that's a strategy to achieve those goals. And I think in the media and many think of it's, you know, the frame for healthcare reform is either single payer or not single payer. And I think that misses the mark.
Mm-hmm. Is there another way to get to lower cost universal coverage and protecting patient rights other than what they're talking about with the single payer idea?
Sure. Yeah. So I think payment reform is a place to start.
Okay. Do you think this reform effort makes any sense?
Which reform effort
are you talking about? The whole plan that's going to get rolled out in about 3 weeks here.
I don't know. I mean, again, I think we have to see the details of that. So we'll certainly be looking at that.
Of those three, the lower costs, universal coverage, and protecting patient rights, is one harder than another?
You know, I think, as I've heard many times over the years, it's easy to do two, but not all three. And I think achieving all three is what's hard.
Okay.
I don't think any one, if you wanted to focus just on cost, it's, you know, comparatively easy to reduce cost, but then you might reduce quality and you might reduce access in the process. So achieving all three together is what the aim is.
Are there doctors that are leaving Vermont that you're aware of within the hospital system? We hear these stories that with healthcare reform, there's uncertainty. Doctors are already leaving, Mark. Is that true?
I've heard that anecdotally. I've heard that it's difficult to recruit physicians into the state because of the uncertainty. But again, we don't collect any data on that, and that's just an anecdote.
Okay. I read recently, I think it was a piece that you had, that some 75% of doctors in the state now are employed by hospitals.
Something like that.
How has that change benefited the consumer?
Well, I think access is I guess the quickest word, and I think physicians are seeking employment in hospitals because they can't afford to stay and practice independently. So if the choice is leave Vermont or seek employment by the hospital, I think for Vermonters it's better that they seek employment with the hospital.
244-1777 is our local number. You can also reach us toll-free at 877-291-8255. Are there too many hospitals?
No, I actually think in the context of what we were talking about with healthcare reform, I would reframe that question. And I think the right question is, do we have the right level of services for Vermonters in here? And again, I don't think that's just hospital services. Again, I think the overall goal for healthcare reform is to improve the health of individual Vermonters, improve the health of our population at large. So I think you have to ask yourself, do we have the right access to mental health services? Do we have the right access to dialysis care, cancer care? So, and again, the emphasis being that we want Vermonters to get care in the most effective setting, and that often that is not the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but let's stick for the moment with the hospitals. There are some people that feel that with the population that we have, that 14 hospitals is a lot.
Well, you know, not every hospital is the same. So we have a small rural state, and of the 14 acute care hospitals we have, 8 of them are what's called critical access hospitals. And that's a federal designation where the hospital has agreed to be very small. So they, in those communities, they provide basic services that Vermonters want to have locally. So again, of the 14, 8 are very small. And even of the remaining, most are small community hospitals, with the exception of Fletcher Allen.
Mm-hmm. This might be a dumb, basic question, but to what degree is there coordination that happens between hospitals in Vermont? I mean, for example, you're not going to have every hospital have like a really big cancer center, or
right.
Is there yep. anybody that's sort of coordinating this and saying we have a big need over here and whatever?
There's a lot of coordination on the physician side. So many of the hospitals share call to make sure that there's coverage, like for orthopedics or surgery, and then also on the outpatient side. So if UVM Medical Center has physicians that have clinic hours in other facilities, so that, you know, for example, if someone has surgery in Burlington, they might be able to get their post-surgery visit closer to home. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. But is there somebody, I mean, that's on the physician level. Is there anybody on sort of the more system department level looking at this and saying, and we had a discussion with Ham Davis. He said, you know, having the ability to do knee replacements at so many facilities might not make sense. Have everybody go up to one facility, for example.
Well, that is part of the future conversation. I think now most hospitals at the community level decide what level of services they're going to have. Now, UVM Medical Center, affiliated with Central Vermont, they're starting to have those conversations as part of that system as well. And I think looking forward, as I said before, I think we have to have a statewide conversation around what level of services is right for Vermonters. I mean, for example, we have an aging population. Looking 10 years out, do we have enough nursing home beds? Do we have enough subacute beds with special services for someone who has traumatic brain injury? Do we have enough Alzheimer's care? So those kinds of questions, I think, have to come into play in addition to the hospital-level services.
244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Let's go to Montpelier. Kim, good morning.
Good morning. I'm calling because I don't know a lot about this healthcare stuff, except that I don't have any. And everyone keeps saying single payer and individual health care, and that's just not the case. My husband doesn't agree with this this health care situation, so he refuses to get insurance, and so they won't let me get it without including his income. So, you know, so I have no insurance because my spouse has made a decision that he doesn't want it. and I don't think that's fair. I can't afford it on my own. So I get sick of hearing individual and single payer when it's really not the case.
Okay. All right. Let me see if B has any comments on that. Wow, that's a tough one.
I don't really. It's just you know, the affordability of health care insurance is definitely an issue, and I am sure that there are people, if the caller wants to go to Vermont Health Connect website, I think a navigator would be happy to talk with them, or they could go to a hospital and talk to a financial advisor and find out what other options they may have, because she certainly may qualify for Medicaid or get a subsidized plan on the exchange. But she certainly, there are plenty of people in Vermont for her to reach out to try to work through that problem.
244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. You talk to people about health care. What are you hearing from people about these plans on the exchange? Good, bad, indifferent? What are you hearing?
You know, I haven't heard actually that much about the plans themselves. I think the plan, as far as the benefit structure, seems, you know, we're on the exchange, and we're very happy with our plan. You know, I run a small business, and I have 10 employees, so we're very happy with that. And as a small business, we haven't, you know, we've worked directly with Blue Cross to get that coverage. So I've heard just anecdotally from individuals that it has taken a while to get on, but they have been able to get on.
Let's go to Burlington. Ann, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. I'm curious to know how closely you work with hospice in Vermont and what the plans are. I heard a wonderful lecture last night with Atul Gawande, who's very knowledgeable about health affairs, blah, blah, blah. But it really piqued my curiosity that this is, for me, I'm 81, a relatively new concept. The idea of hospice care for the most infirm at the end of life.
Okay. All right.
Well, I share with you. I think Atul Gawande is fabulous and is a great visionary in healthcare reform. I don't know anything specific. Certainly, hospice services are available at every hospital. And again, as we have an aging population, it is certainly an issue that I think will increase in importance as we're trying to coordinate care for Vermonters.
Are we ready for this demographic boom? Because you're talking about 10 years from now. If we need to get something done 10 years from now, we need to start planning and building it yesterday.
Exactly.
So are we ready?
Well, we're not ready yet. But again, I think that's part of, again, you know, we want to talk about how are we going to finance healthcare, but we need to talk about what are we financing. And that's where I think, you know, we've been talking more and more about improving the health of the population and working with the Department of Health, with Department of Vermont Health Access, the Green Mountain Care Board, to look more holistically at the demographics, the infrastructure, the money, all of it, and figure out how are we going to be prepared for the graying of our state.
So where are we not ready today? If the demographic boom hit today, where are we underprepared?
Well, probably I would say in the subacute area, you know, and I think the backlog for patients staying in hospitals is often that they don't have a place to go. So I would say that's an area where, you know, we're focused on. Certainly you want on the front end, you want enough primary care and community-based services so that Vermonters never need to go to the hospital. But on the other end, as we're graying, they're going to go to the hospital. We know that. And we want to make sure that they are going to have the hospice services and the subacute nursing home services and home care services, as we were talking about before, so that they have those services to go home to back in their community.
We had some folks on earlier this week. I mentioned this to you before we started, from the Chittenden County United Way, talking about how the VNA is losing, I mean, the way she used the term, losing about $1.7 million a year. So any thoughts on how we can finance that in a way that's even remotely sustainable?
Well, I think a big part of that challenge is Their largest payer, I believe, is Medicare. So that is a more complicated problem. Obviously, that's the federal government, and how Medicare reimburses is harder to change. So I think, again, at the state level, I think we have to look at what infrastructure do we want to have, and you have to pay the cost of that infrastructure if you want to have it. Otherwise, it's going to go away.
Mm-hmm. So, well, one of the things they're talking about in this whole budget situation they're in Montpelier is to cut the Medicaid reimbursement rates. What's the impact of that on the hospitals?
Well, for hospitals, it again causes all providers, not just hospitals, to tighten their belt because they have to make a margin at the end of the day. It's that's obvious. And so I think for hospitals, it just increases that pressure to do that. And it also increases the pressure on commercial payers, because commercial payers for years have made up the difference, and that's the Medicaid cost shift.
Let's go to Duxbury. Nils, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking the call. I have a simple question, or maybe two questions.
Okay.
There are no simple questions in healthcare.
No, this should be an easy one.
Okay.
You know, we've been wringing our hands trying to figure out how to control costs and take care of everyone's health and be fair to the providers, et cetera, et cetera. I've asked on more than one occasion a representative to the legislature why it is that we spend what to me seems like an inordinate amount of time and money advertising. I'll give you an example. I cut myself a couple of years ago working around the house. I had to go down and get a couple of stitches. And my GP said, you know, there might be some nerve damage. You might want to see a hand guy to, you know, have a look. So we did that, and he gave me the name of a person up in the Burlington area who does that kind of work as a specialty. I don't need to hear about the available techniques, equipment, staff. And I know it costs money, and I don't know where that money is coming from, but I have a business, and when I advertise, I have to write a check. So I would like to ask you two things. One, how much a year is the Vermont public, so-called hospital and doctor sort of system, spending on advertising, and why is it that we have to spend that much? And I'll listen to your response off the air. Thank
sure.
you. And I'm going to ask you to hold on 1 sec for that answer. We're going to take a short commercial break. We'll come back, continue our discussion. Bea Gross is joining us. She's the president and CEO of the Vermont Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. We'll be back right after this.
I spent a lot of time worrying about sending my son to college. I always pushed him to do well in school so that he'd have a better shot at a successful future, and he surpassed all of my expectations. But when the time came, I wasn't sure there would be enough money for him to go to college, even with available grants, scholarships, and federal loans. When he told me about the Vermont Advantage Loan, a private loan from the Vermont Student Assistance Corporation, I think I was more excited than he was. He'd been doing his homework and found a solution right here in Vermont. We looked into it together and found that the Vermont Advantage Loan offers some of the lowest fixed rates seen in years. We also felt really good about VSAC being a local nonprofit. VSAC's been helping Vermont students and families for more than 45 years. They're so focused on doing what's best for my son. VSAC was the last piece of the puzzle to help send my son to college.
Go to vsac.org/advantage to learn more about the Vermont Advantage Loan.
The beat goes on during the countdown to 2800 at Lamoille Valley Ford. Dan Keene here to tell you we've delivered 2,630 vehicles during the countdown to 2800 with just 170 to go. From now through year's end, buy or lease any new car or SUV in stock at Lamoille Valley Ford and get a $1,000 gas card or discount of equal value. And we'll double your gas card to $2,000 towards any F-Series truck in stock. Right now, between our two dealerships, take advantage of the largest selection of vehicles in our history, including over 270 25 F-150s and Super Duty trucks, many with plows and dumps ready to go. And we're grateful to super customers like Sheila and Russell Brown of Marshfield, who just got their new Escape at Lamoille Valley Ford. So drive Route 14, 15, or 16 to Lamoille Valley Ford in Hardwick. Come help us reach our goal and get a $1 or $2,000 gas card during the countdown to 2800 happening right now at Lamoille Valley Ford.
There is no better place to shop for a Christmas tree and festive holiday greenery for your home than Mad River Garden Center. The moment you arrive, you'll be struck by the aroma of those balsam firs and the long-lasting value of a Fraser fir. All Vermont trees grown in Craftsbury. They have petite three-footers to stately 15-foot tall trees, plus wreaths of all sizes, even poinsettias, cyclamen, centerpieces, paper whites, and more. Mad River Garden Center is open 7 days a week through Christmas Eve on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
Happy holidays, everybody. This is Andrew from Onion River Sports. Even though the store is chock full of all kinds of fun little gadgets and stocking stuffers, Onion River is mainly known for cross-country ski equipment. These are not your father's skis. They've gotten much shorter, which means you can control them better. They've gotten wider, more stable, and they have a lot more side cut, which is the hourglass shape to them, so they turn much better. It still has those fish scales on the back, so it's still a waxless ski. You pair it up with a boot that's heavier and beefier, going back to a three-pin binding, and that's Onion River's forte, is what we're really known for. We still have plenty of Mad River Rockets. Great product. It's very popular. Another thing we have at Onion River Sports is a little new black diamond headlamp called the Ion. It's $25. We have all these little lights that'll mount on your handlebar. They're tiny, and like 300, 500 lumens, which is incredibly bright. If you have anybody in your family who's a cyclist, and if they do any kind of commuting at night, all these new lights are wonderful ideas. Come down and see us on Langdon Street in Montpelier.
Hey, Bob Nelson here, and this one is for the ladies. Tuesday night, December 9th, is Nelson's third annual Ladies' Night. This year's extra special is our grand prize is a six-quart KitchenAid mixer valued at $449. Each hour, we'll be giving away gift certificates to local businesses, and here's more big news. The first 100 purchases get a $10 Lenny's Shoe and Apparel gift card, and enjoy tasty treats from Maureen Sweet Treats and Ellie and Cheryl's Simply Delicious. But best of all are the Ladies' Night savings. Save 20% off almost everything in the store, even our red tag markdown items. There are some exclusions. Call for details. Whether you're buying for yourself, a friend, a relative, or your spouse, you'll find them something at Nelson Ace Hardware. So ladies, join us on Tuesday, December 9th from 6 to 9 p.m. for holiday shopping, great prizes, and free refreshments. Nelson's will be closed from 5 to 6 to get ready. Then the doors will open just for the ladies. It's Ladies' Night on Tuesday, December 9th from 6 to 9 p.m.
We're back continuing our discussion. We've been talking this morning about healthcare reform. B. Grouse is the president and CEO of the Vermont Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. So this question about advertising that hospitals do. Makes sense?
Well, I think the legislature took that up in 2010 and decided not to move forward with it. I think with everything else, as I said before, we've got to get a handle on costs and while we achieve coverage and while we improve quality and choice for Vermonters. So let's keep our eye on those goals. And in doing that, you know, if the legislature wants to look at advertising again as part of that, they will, or the Green Mountain Care Board will.
Mm-hmm. Where are some situations where it makes sense that there's advertising, in your view?
Well, I think for letting Vermonters know what services are where. You know, for example, in Washington County, if there was a hand surgeon, and, you know, I think Central Vermont might want to let them know, Vermonters in their community, that there's a hand surgeon so that they don't go out of state to get those services. So,
244-1777 is our local number, toll free 877-291-8255. When you say hospitals need to get a handle on costs, what does that mean? What do you mean by that? Per procedure, what does that mean? What are the costs?
Well, I think, you know, the costs really are what services we're providing. And currently today, hospitals are paid generally on a transaction basis. So we call it a fee for service.
Right.
So you get a service, you get a bill, you know, and it works that way. And I think that's why we are looking forward to working with the Green Mountain Care Board on payment reform so that we move away from that transaction-based system, which drives volume, because the more you do, the more you get paid. So we're looking to figure out a new payment methodology for hospitals and employed physicians to figure out how would we move to a non-transaction-based payment.
Okay. Can you help me understand, for example, how that would work? Because let's say you spent more money on preventative programs. Ultimately, with the aging population, people are going to have to get procedures done too. So is it going to be kind of both? How would it work?
It certainly will be both. I don't think there's going to be a one-size-fits-all for payment. I think we are going to move towards some sort of a capitation. There's been a lot of talk about global budgets lately, but the idea is that a hospital would get a defined payment, either a global payment from a provider such as Blue Cross, and based on historic trends. So, and again, I'm making these numbers up, but say a hospital received $50 million in total payments from Blue Cross in the previous year, they would trend that big number up by, say, general inflation and say, okay, well, you know, you got $50 million last year, and so with 3% inflation, you're going to get whatever the number is, $52 million. And that's what you have to work with. So that's the general concept. It's a lot more complicated than that, but it changes the business model, or it has the potential to change the business model for hospitals in that they want to take a look at what services they are providing and are there better ways to provide those services. As I was talking about before, can they work more closely with community providers? Can they work more closely with designated agencies and others to make sure that Vermonters are achieving their outcomes for their own health in ways that make more sense, mm-hmm. less siloed, less fragmented?
Mm-hmm. But, I guess I sort of wonder how this works on a practical level. You have somebody with heart disease. Maybe you want to spend more money on obesity programs. Maybe you want to do other programs, heart healthy food, that kind of thing that would make sense up front. But is the theory that there will be fewer heart procedures down the road? Is that where the money gets saved? Or am I missing something in this? Do you see what I'm saying?
I'm not sure I do. So, in terms of lifetime expenditures?
Yeah, you're talking about bringing down the costs.
Yeah.
And you're saying that one of the things you do is you shift away from a transaction for each service that gets provided. You pay more of a global fee for me. Theoretically, that might include changing programs and doing more preventative health programs.
Sure, right.
But I guess here's what I'm wondering. Is the cost savings theoretically down the road that there'll be fewer heart procedures as a result?
Well, I think that's the hope. But again, it depends on what lens you're going to look through. If you're going to look through, you can argue it a number of different ways. I think we're probably looking at a fairly short lens, given the budget pressures and given our general scope. We don't tend to look 20 years down the road of whether or not we're going to spend more in your lifetime totally, as opposed to what are we going to spend more for you in the next 5 years. So, and so I think the focus is, can we work with you to prevent your diabetes or prevent your heart condition, in this window of time, in this 5 or 10 year window of time? Will you develop, diabetes maybe when you're 70? You might, but will you perhaps live until you're 90 as opposed to 70, and that your total lifetime expenditures might be greater because you lived 20 more years? That certainly could be true.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another couple of calls here. Let's go to Williamstown. Mark, good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a question about
Yes.
Home care.
Okay.
Now, supposedly this saves money for the state, saves money for keeping people out of nursing homes, out of the hospital. I personally have an issue with choices for care, wondering why it takes so long to come into effect. I actually have my mother at home, have had to hire LNAs to care for her, 24-hour care. Literally, it cost me $1,200 a week, and I do the third shift personally. And I've been 4 months, almost 5 months now, trying to get long-term care into effect to help me out with paying this. Where's the, you know, why can't something come in line a little bit quicker?
My general understanding is that that's a budget issue. So
if I just drop the whole ball of wax, put her back in a nursing home, long-term care would cover this. Which would cost a whole lot more than $1,200 a week.
Yeah.
So I'm,
you know, did I just fall through the cracks, or is everybody in this situation?
I don't know the answer to that specifically, but I do know that there's a waiting list for choices of care. So, and the waiting list is related to the funding.
All right.
So is this going to change when the state takes over the health care?
Good question.
So everybody's in the dark and nobody knows what the hell's going on.
It sounds like it. Thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Sorry about your situation. It's a total waste of money.
Too.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, this is that we were just talking about, this up front or pay now or pay later.
Right.
Where does Dartmouth fit into this whole discussion? Is Dartmouth going to participate as though it were a Vermont hospital in this?
You're asking me all these questions I don't know the answer to. Dartmouth certainly is a big part of our healthcare system. They, in fact, are the second largest provider of services to Vermonters. So certainly they do participate every day, and I am sure that they will continue. How they will continue, you know, again, I think those are one. That's one of the details we'll figure out as we move along.
Let's go to East Montpelier. Dave, good morning.
Good morning. A while back, a woman called and said her husband made the decision not to have health care. In my mind, the real decision he made is to let other people pay for his health care. If he's on the highway and somebody crashes into his car through no fault of his, he's taken to the emergency room by an ambulance, and someone else is going to pay for some of that health care. So if she's still on, maybe she could address this to her husband and say, look, the decision you've made is to let other people pay for your health care. And I'd like B to address that whole idea of cost shifting.
Okay.
Yep.
Right.
You're correct. And certainly the, you know, for Vermonters who need services, we do have access to services. And you know, and that's with our emergency rooms that are open 24/7. So, and that infrastructure is there for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about this cost shift? How significant is this?
It is significant, and it's a big part of the reason why I think we're looking to work with the Green Mountain Care Board on an all-payer waiver, which would essentially bring Medicare into the payment reform discussion for Vermont, our big federal payer. But the commercial payments are about 144% of cost, and Medicaid is about 50% of cost.
Okay.
So that causes a big swing in reimbursement for providers.
Is that pretty typical for what the nation is, or are we unusual for some reason?
You know, it's
real high.
I mean, one of the challenges for our healthcare system nationwide is that we have 50 different Medicaid programs. So they are very different. The cost shift is an issue for many states, but not all.
Uh-huh. Let's go to Williston. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. Our question is, why does it cost $200 to become a new patient for registration?
Sorry?
Where did you get that?
Paid it.
Where?
In several hospitals. Several hospitals. Then if you go in, you're a new patient, and they're going to send you a $200 bill that does not cover by your insurance. I don't understand why $200 or $175 is being charged, basically registering.
Wow. So you ran into this at Fletcher Allen? Where'd you run into this?
Ran into Fletcher Allen. I ran into it Northwestern.
They charged you $175 to be a patient.
Because I'm a new patient.
All right, I've never heard of that. Have you heard of that?
I've never heard of that. I don't know whether that's
I do quite a bit of billing. I handle workman's compensation situations, and I have this quite often.
Well, I guess I would just suggest...
And I have it on a personal level also.
All right.
I guess I would just recommend going back to the institutions and asking for clarification. I've never heard of it.
And I did, that's what it cost.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, I'll look into it. Thanks.
Accept the weather, accept the payment.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll look into it. I haven't heard of it.
That's very interesting. Thanks for your call. So, B, let me understand something here. So there's the discussion about changing the way that hospitals get paid for the services they provide. This whole idea of instead of for each and every procedure that there would be a flat payment, presumably, for each payment. I know that's really oversimplifying
right.
it. What is the motivation, though, for hospitals to change the way it's being done today? You're getting paid for every procedure. You're making a margin. You're staying in business. Why change that?
Well, it's just not sustainable any longer. I mean, I think that's the short answer. There just is not. Healthcare spending as a percentage of the overall economy is growing, and it's crowding out available resources for other priorities like education. So, and that's, again, it's not just a Vermont problem. That's a national problem. So we have to change the incentives for again, not just hospitals, but all providers, so that we are working to change the infrastructure of the whole system so that we're coordinating care better and improving clinical outcomes. Again, to me, that's the most important thing, that we are going to help Vermonters achieve their health goals and in the aggregate, improve in population health. So we can't do that in the payment system. It doesn't have the right incentives built into it. So it's a volume-based system. So the outcome of that payment system is that each provider operates in their own silo and continues to provide more services without coordinating with other providers to make sure that we're achieving the goals of the patient. Mm-hmm. And so that's the big incentive around payment reform.
It sounds as though you're really focusing on the consumer there. Is it also, on a practical level, the only way? I mean, are hospitals not going to be able to stay in business if they keep doing this, doing it the transactional way?
Yeah, because I think what will happen is you'll see an exacerbation of the cost shift, because you're not going to be able to, the state and the federal government is not going to increase payments. They're going to cut payments, and then providers will look to commercial payers to make up the difference, and there's no more money there. So mm-hmm. The system has to change.
Is there any indication that there are better health outcomes if you pay hospitals on this per patient way as opposed to transactional, the fees? I mean, are there countries that have tried this and they're getting better outcomes?
I wouldn't necessarily look to other countries, but there is a growing body of evidence around patient-centered medical homes, which is, again, more along the lines of this coordinated approach toward care to reduce hospital services. And there is evidence that care is improved.
Mm-hmm. Do you know how? I mean, how is when you say care is improved? People live longer? What's the...
Well, again, I think the lens is fairly short-term. We're not looking at, are people living healthier lives forever after? But in the short term, are they more compliant with their medication? People who are, maybe going to the emergency room a couple of times a month, what is their emergency room use? What's their perception of health? Do they feel like they are healthier and that they are... living a better life? And so those shorter term measures are indicating that people are feeling like they're getting better care, and objectively, again, through like ER use and medication compliance, they're changing their behavior.
Mm-hmm. How big a burden is this opiate addiction problem on Vermont hospitals?
It's huge. It's enormous. It's every day in our emergency rooms. Absolutely.
I mean, this is a relatively new problem, isn't it?
Well, you know, I spent 10 years of my life working as an ER nurse, but so I don't think it's a new problem. I think there's a new focus on the problem, which is a good one.
Is it a lot worse, do you think?
I don't know whether it's worse, but I do think that it has been a longstanding issue. And, you know, and I think for a rural state, I think that is a new issue for a rural state. Nationwide, it's been a long time problem.
Mm-hmm.
But for a state like Vermont, I think the drug issue has increased recently.
Mm-hmm. And are hospitals prepared to deal with this?
Yes, absolutely.
Didn't, back on this global budgeting question, didn't Rutland try to do that at some point?
Rutland,
wasn't there an experiment?
Yeah, Rutland and Southwestern Vermont Healthcare both have spent quite a bit of time studying global budgets and continue to do that.
Okay.
And that's an active part of, you know, looking at what payment, how do we change payment? And okay. That's still an active part of that discussion.
Is there anything that's come out of that? Anything that anybody's learned? Not
yet, but again, as we start looking at what an all-payer waiver process would look like with Medicare, I am sure that global budgets will come up.
Let's go to South Burlington. Brad, good morning. Good morning, Brad.
Hi, this is Matt from Hinesburg.
Okay, Matt, how you doing?
Good. Yeah, I just had one thing to add to the previous caller who was questioning the advertising.
Yeah.
And that is, if I wanted to put someone in a trance, I would play one of the current hospital commercials.
All right. They're not really working for you, it sounds like.
Yeah. No, I don't think it's just totally unnecessary. If I can't go to my general practitioner and get the kind of detailed information about what's available for a specific injury or, you know, disease or something, if they don't know it, then, you know, it just seems like the system is failing.
All right. Okay.
Good to know.
Let's go to South Burlington. Brad, good morning.
Good morning. Question for your guest and yourself. I understand that the single payer is supposed to, I guess, eliminate the need for the billing per procedure and by the company there, but to the hospitals, to the insurance companies, correct?
Is that your understanding?
There'll be one payment that won't be too back to all these other insurance companies. But won't there have to be that current system in place for all the out-of-state people that visit mm-hmm. and all the other insurance policies that are still in practice
yep.
in addition to the single payer?
Yes.
Mm. All right.
Yeah, I think what you're speaking to is will the, if there was a single payer, would all of that transaction-based data collection go away? And I think the answer is no, because even though hospitals wouldn't be generating a bill necessarily from, say, an office visit or from an emergency room visit, they still need, we call that encounter data. We still need that data to understand what happened during that visit so that we, because we have to report on a lot of that data anyway. So so the data collection would still happen.
Thank you for your call. One of the claims that's made about having a new system, a universal system, is that it would save a lot of money on administrative costs. Is that a fair statement to make?
I don't think so. I think that remains to be seen. In reference to the previous caller, the whole idea around claims is that the claim would go away. And again, I just explained that I think the data collection for each transaction would not go away on the provider side. On the payer side, you know, their business is to receive bills and pay those bills. So, you know, I think there might be some reduction in administrative savings. But again, the core part of their business, I don't think would change that much. So that certainly will be a big question, something we'll be looking for when the governor's plan comes out.
So that's a big myth that everybody's claiming there's big administrative savings to be had.
I think there's some, but I do think the idea that we'll be able to finance our healthcare system on administrative savings is a myth.
Because the Shaw report, I mean, had administrative costs that were, I mean, they were extremely high. I mean, I think it, what you just said, that it was basically going to pay for the whole system.
Right. Well, and also, too, we are going to have new spending. You know, part of the whole idea about building a new healthcare system that improves the health of the population, one of the evolving areas is an area called data analytics. And that's to bring in more predictive capability for figuring out not just the people who are sick, but who's next, you know, who's going to get sick, and can we provide services to them, such as, you know, getting them on blood pressure medication or diabetes medication, so that we are staving off that illness and helping turn that individual's behavior around so that they don't get sick. But that data infrastructure and those data analytics, which we would like to have available for all different providers, so that providers in designated agencies, hospitals, home health, hospice, have that longitudinal view of that patient as well. So that is new and evolving, but it's also not cheap.
Sounds like maybe there'd be short-term an increase in spending to get the system kind of going.
You know, I'll believe it when I see it, when I see a lot of administrative savings, but I think it's probably going to be a net zero.
Let's take another couple of calls here. Let's go to Cambridge. Jeremy, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I just had a quick question for your guest. I have a procedure, an ultrasound done pretty much yearly, and I've had to for the last, say, 5 years, and I've found that going to different hospitals, I have extremely different price differences. Fletcher Allen and Fannie Allen, the procedure is $1,250. And if I go to Copley in Morrisville, it's $300. I just would like to address that. And if there, with the healthcare system, if there's going to be any sort of standardized pricing system, because I think that's the biggest mystery with everybody is that when you go to the doctor, you don't know what it's going to cost. And it's just like this explosion in, of billing. So anyway, I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Yeah, so can I just ask you, is this related? Is this a heart ultrasound by any chance?
No, okay. It's not. It's like a small cyst that I just have to keep an eye on.
Okay. All right. Wow.
So, it's a huge difference in price.
That's incredible.
I totally agree. And this is exactly why we need payment reform.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like Massachusetts is working on something right now or that they are listing pricing, you know, for, you know, you go get your car worked on, you're going to want to know how much it's going to cost to put tires on it, you know, and when you start addressing your health care, it's like this, it's kind of a black box. And I think that there's way too much differences in price out there.
Hmm. So there's no set price B that's for an ultrasound or procedure across the state.
Right. There's no statewide set fee schedule. No.
So each individual hospital just does they could charge whatever they want.
Well, they don't charge whatever they want. I mean, hospital budgets are monitored by the Green Mountain Care Board. So they're scrutinized every year. I think what the caller is referencing is that hospitals set their prices in order to make a margin in the aggregate. And every hospital is different, is in a different community. And so, for example, you'll see the price variation largely because of what we call differences in payer mix. So, for example, a community might have 80% Medicare and Medicaid and only 20% commercial. And so, because of the cost shifting that we were talking about before, they may have to price some of their services differently so that they make a margin at the end of the day. Whereas in other communities, like in Burlington, a much younger community, they have a much, I would say, a better payer mix. And so they can price their services, again, in order to make a margin. And remember, their margins are determined by the Green Mountain Care Board. So they have to, in the aggregate, only grow so much, but how they price those individual services will vary a lot depending on their contracts with the payers.
Mm-hmm. So of the $2 billion that hospitals spend, is there any way to indicate how much of that is administrative, like 10%?
I think it is. I think it's 6 to 8%.
Okay.
I don't know the exact number, but okay. But again, that's all part of the hospital budget.
All right. So next year, in addition to the healthcare reform, there's also the Green Mountain Care Board. You're going to be looking for what from the Green Mountain Care Board, if anything?
Well, again, for the Green Mountain Care Board this year in the all-payer waiver process, we are going to look to be a part of that process, and I expect that that we will. And so I think we're going to be looking for more clarity on, you know, what the previous caller said around what is the Green Mountain Care Board's policy on standardized payments for those that are still going to be under fee-for-service. What are the parameters around the payment reform pilots that we expect will roll out as part of this process? So we're going to be looking for a lot more detail.
Thanks for your time this morning.
Oh,
appreciate
sure.
it very
Thanks,
much.
Mark. Take care.
Bea Grass.
Happy holidays.
You too. Bea Grass is the president and CEO of the Vermont Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, AM 550 WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier. We'll be back after this.
I joined the workforce right out of high school, but I knew I needed more education in order to get ahead.
For the past 40 years, the Community College of Vermont has helped more than 10,000 Vermonters get a college education.
I've always enjoyed science, so I'm getting my degree in STEM studies.
CCV offers convenient day, evening, and online classes at a price you can afford.
After CCV, I'm heading to Vermont Tech for a bachelor's in renewable energy. I feel confident that my education will help me get a great job in a growing industry.
Stop in at one of our 12 locations today or visit us online at ccv.edu/register.
802 Honda promised super friendly service with low pricing, and you heard us. Thanks to all of our customers for making 802 Honda the fastest growing Honda dealer in Vermont.
At 802 Honda, we love to listen. Our Lease It Your Way program is designed to customize a lease for both your budget and driving needs.
You can drive away every new Honda with absolutely no money down, or pick your payment, and we will show exactly how much money down you need. The biggest myth about leasing is mileage. We're custom designing leases for higher mileage drivers all the time, often with 20,000 miles or more. Let us custom tailor and lease your way.
Find out what many